It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish.
Still got a couple seconds before we give away those tickets. So if you missed us going into the break, 11:05, we're giving away two tickets.
Basically, call right now.
Yeah, two tickets to Cougs versus Wildcats out at TDECU tomorrow. We got a couple games tonight featuring ranked teams. There's Miami and Louisville. You got to say Louisville. That's how they like it to be said. But I was looking at Nebraska, and they're ranked again. And I was trying to figure out the last time Nebraska was ranked this late in the season. The last time Nebraska was ranked, they're 25 right now, at the week 8 point in the season was 2016. 2016, the last time Nebraska was ranked at this point in a season. The last time they were ranked was early last season. They were ranked 23.
I bet they've been ranked early in a lot of the season.
I'm actually looking at it right now. I went to Sports Reference.
I guess they do go 5-7 every year.
Yeah, because Sports Reference has their ranked history, at least according to the AP poll. They were ranked at 24 early, ranked in 25 early, 2019 early, and then not ranked again until 2016.
Wow. So, they don't even get the, like...
Not even the preseason year Nebraska bump.
They wear a helmet that we respect, so...
Not even.
Texas will be ranked 22 coming every season until they are actually good.
Yeah, Nebraska, they were ranked preseason in 2019 and not in 17 or 18. Man.
So it really is over for Nebraska.
I said it.
They don't even get the brand bump.
No.
They don't even get the, like... Sure, whatever.
Yep. Miami's gotten that bump for years.
I know. Texas got it for a decade.
And they go to Minnesota, so they could very well lose that ranking pretty quickly. 5-1 Nebraska versus 4-2 Minnesota. And because they're Nebraska, and I assume it'll just be a close ball game because they're playing in the Big Ten, and that's what they do. And it'll come down to whether Rayola makes a mistake or not, I imagine. So that is one of the games on the schedule. Depending on how you feel, if you care about how highly ranked the team is, you would say the Miami-Louisville game is the featured game of the night, unless you're a Big Ten fan. And that's one where the spread is 13.5, and there's nothing that you can look at comparing the two teams and say anything's leaning Louisville's way other than Miami's history of blowing things and Cristobal's history of losing the teams he shouldn't lose to. I think Miami actually, it's a stat that somehow exists. Since they've been in the ACC, they're 10-3 on Friday nights. So it's not like it.
Oh, for Miami.
Miami. They played 13 Friday night ACC games.
I thought it was Cristobal. I was like, well, years he's done that?
No, they have not put them on Friday night 13 times since he's been there. They haven't been good enough to be featured that much anyway. So history for Miami is you feel good about them, they get off to a good start, and they blow it.
Yeah, I feel like if this is at Louisville,
there's a real shot.
Yeah.
They've actually played Louisville pretty well. I think they won, I think, two out of the last three since Jeff Brom has been there. There was the game last year where it was 52-45. And I talked about it this morning with Lance and Michael Connor, who filled in for John, that if this was last year's Miami defense, you would be well within your rights to go. 13.5, get the F out of here. This team doesn't stop anyone. But this team this year stops people. So I'm a little less concerned by it because when you got a bad defense, you just never know how many points it's going to take to win. They don't have a bad defense. They have a good defense. You look at what they've done through the first four or five games of the season. I try to exclude the Bethune game because actually who cares what happens in that one. The defense has shown up and played well. And sure, there have been moments later in games, particularly FSU, where they couldn't get off the field on fourth down. But for the most part, this has been a defense that pressures the quarterback, does it very simply, doesn't have to blitz a lot, which helps. And their secondary has been able to hold up. And Louisville, with Miller Moss, the former USC quarterback, he's okay. He's been Miller Moss, the same Miller Moss we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. He's fine, unless you pressure him and much like other quarterbacks, he kind of falls apart. And that Louisville offensive line isn't the greatest. So if Miami can get there a four, and Louisville, with their zone running scheme, doesn't hit explosives, they have a good player in Brown, who is a Miami native, but people have seen him be a little hobbled this year. If they're not going to hit explosive in the run game and they don't force Miami to crowd the line or have to blitz to get to the quarterback, I don't think it's going to go well for Louisville.
No.
But that's why we go. That's why we're going to watch tonight.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at pretty much every game off the top of my head, every game on a lot of the top five teams. I mean, we talked about Ohio State's schedule. I'm sure Miami, unless there's like a huge matchup coming up that like you look at every game, you're like, yeah, they should win it pretty easily.
Yeah.
We all know what happens in October, November.
They have to go to SMU, so that might be a scary one. Yeah. Their former, not Mario's former OC, but Brett Lashley was an OC there under Manny Diaz. So we know SMU can score, and I'm sure they'll be very excited to, I don't know what their record will be at the time, but that's a game that could change the trajectory of a season if you beat what could be a top five team when they come to your city. So, but to the schedule, Miami doesn't have a lot left on it. This is one of the tests that reasonably isn't really one, but it can be one just because of the nature of college football. When you're a 2-touchdown favorite at home, it should not be close, but that doesn't mean anything. Other than when we move away from Friday and other than those two games, you go to Saturday. It starts off early. You got LSU going to Vandy. Vandy's had the week off.
If Vanderbilt can take care of business against LSU.
That's where we're at right now. Vandy is a home favorite against LSU. It's a small number, 2.5, but this is an LSU team whose defense has been carrying this team, which is not something we could have said over the last couple of years. They've been really good while the offense has been mediocre. LSU really can't run the football. Other than their game against Southeast Louisiana, the LSU offense hasn't scored more than 25 points in any game. And, of course, we think about LSU, and now you're stretching back a while now. But Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, the receiver play, even last year when Nuss was healthy, they could put up some numbers. But this is an LSU team who can't score. So can Vandy put together drives against this LSU defense? Because Vandy, when they weren't turning the ball over against Alabama in the red zone, particularly in the first half, they were moving the football. They had an explosive run to give them the lead early, and they were on the verge of going up 14-0 before the Pavia fumble. He threw another pick in the red zones as well. So they were able to move the ball early against Bama. Then once Bama got the turnovers, they figured out what Vandy likes to do. But when I think about this game, it almost feels like LSU's defense is going to have to win this one for them.
I was going to say, LSU against Power Conference competition this season, just their point totals, 17, 20, 19, 20.
Yeah, the 23 points they scored against Louisiana Tech. Yeah,
I'm throwing that out.
Is the best they've done against an FBS opponent.
I'm throwing that one out.
Like Southeast.
To be fair to them, I'm throwing out the 23.
Yeah, Southeast is the directional FCS team. Louisiana Tech at least is an FBS opponent, but they only scored 23 that night too.
Yeah, so Diego Pavia, can you score 3 touchdowns against LSU?
That feels like what it's going to take. Vanderbilt's not terrible defensively, so LSU's not going to overwhelm them physically.
Yeah.
They don't overwhelm anyone physically. So can you get to – it's a road game for LSU.
Not even off a bye.
No, they played South Carolina last week and scored 20. Can they hold Vanderbilt under 21 points? Because if they can't, the rules of the season say they're not winning this football game.
No.
And by the way, they scored 20 against Florida with the help of 5 interceptions and a pick 6.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
They only scored 13 offensive points in that game.
Even like the 17 against Clemson at the time, we're like, oh, Clemson, it's Clemson. Look at the paw print. They drove around the stadium and then ran down the hill.
And then we saw Steve Angeli do what he did to them.
Their resume has just completely eroded.
Yeah. So,
which is how they find themselves underdogs, a top 10 team that's an underdog to Vanderbilt.
At Vanderbilt, which LSU of all people, underdogs of Vanderbilt. Who could have thought it? And even our resident Vandy honk, Keith Calden, he doesn't like that Vandy's favorite. He would prefer that LSU didn't have that extra motivation, I guess, as he tries to will Vanderbilt to 10-2. So that one's early at 11 o'clock. Other ones, of course, you've got OU trying to bounce back against South Carolina, John Mature in that one. We'll see if he can prove to be the 20th best player in football, like in college football, like Blake Brockmeyer thinks he is. We talked about it yesterday. He has not played to that level. A&M goes to Arkansas. That has always been a weird game. Is it? But it's is it on campus again, or is it back in? Or is it? No, it's in Fayetteville.
This is in Fayetteville.
So it's not in Jerry World, which where a lot of the weirdness has occurred. This one's on campus. Yeah. Arkansas put up a fight against Tennessee last week. Played well offensively. Taylen Green did the Taylen Green thing where he's great on one play and then atrocious on the next. Just the vibes you get from him. Yeah. A&M coming off the win against Florida. They're 7.5-point favorites. Arkansas is being led by Bobby Petrino. Yeah. That man wants that job as the interim coach.
Dial something up, Bobby.
Gotta try to get this one at home. You're not going to have a lot of opportunities, Arkansas, to win games just because you're Arkansas right now. But
I mean, they play Auburn and Mississippi State at home as well, so they got a chance.
I'll give you that.
But this is their chance to win a big game, especially at home.
Yeah, if you're going to do the we're going to bring back Bobby Petrino. This is the one he's got to win. He does have Missouri later in the year, but his fate might be decided by that point.
Yeah.
If he wants to really give himself a chance to keep this job, he's got to get this
one. The people who can hire him are going to be at this game.
Yes. That is
Bobby
correct.
Bobby Petrino, are you a man or are you a mouse?
Look at you. Not a pregame speech for the team.
No, for Bobby
Petrino. For Bobby Petrino.
Michael Irvin, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're ringing the bell like Michael Irvin.
And all it would do is just muck up the SEC race even further. Not that Arkansas will get themselves involved, but if A&M drops a game, it just makes it a more crowded and more compressed. So 7.5-point favorite, A&M going to Arkansas. It's a big one, not just for A&M, but for the interim head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. We'll see.
I'm rooting for Bobby Petrino.
Are you rooting for him or against A&M?
No, I think just for the rest of the season. I'm just like, okay. I think the funniest possible thing is that he just becomes the head coach of Arkansas again.
What would help would be a win at Texas.
Also, good Halloween costume out there, people.
Just get
a neck brace and an Arkansas hoodie. You can be Bobby Petrino.
Use a little blush to make your face look red.
Get a little, what's called road rash on your nose.
Exactly. You won't be rooting for him the day he plays Texas, but he does have LSU and Missouri, and laid out Auburn and Mississippi State.
He can lose that game and still get the job.
As long as he's won a couple more.
Except for that game.
Sure.
He was 7-5.
Yeah, sure. You're rooting for him has its limits, and the limit is when he faces the Longhorns. You got Ole Miss and Georgia last year. That was a game where Ole Miss won at home. They beat Georgia 28-10. I don't expect it to go that way this time, but the question is the Georgia offense the one we saw against Auburn? Now, Auburn's a good defensive football team. It's the only reason any of their games have been competitive, the ones they've lost, because Jackson Arnold and that offense isn't any good. Are we going to get Georgia's offense against Tennessee, where Gunnar Stockton was able to make some plays, or are we going to get the one versus Auburn? Because if we get the one that we saw versus Auburn, Ole Miss is winning that game. They're going to be able to put up enough points because Georgia doesn't do enough, at least pressuring the quarterback, that Ole Miss, who likes to play up tempo, is going to be in disadvantage, not advantageous passing situation. So I got to see Gunnar Stockton play better against an Ole Miss team who thinks they got a real shot to win the SEC, and rightfully so. They're a top five team in the country.
Yeah, and on the other side, I mean, I think it does kind of come down to Gunnar Stockton against the Ole Miss defense and Trinidad Chambliss at Athens.
That his first real road game this year?
They played at Kentucky. No, although that might have been Austin Simmons drawing.
It was an Austin Simmons game. Yeah. He has not gone on the road yet as a starting quarterback.
That it'll be a test. D2 transfer coming from Ferris State. Now go play the Georgia Bulldogs in Athens. Good luck. Good luck, buddy.
That might be what it comes down to.
Yeah, just like
Chambliss on the road.
What's the stadium pulse looking like for Trinidad Chambliss?
Well, he's a senior, so at least in our game, it wouldn't be as bad as it would be for a freshman, even if he is a first-time road starter. But yeah, it's Stockton versus Chambliss. Can Chambliss run that Ole Miss offense? They're going to go quick, get the ball out of his hands, and he's been able to avoid mistakes. It was it was funny. Lane Kiffin was asked about their slow start, and he said, told him to cut that D2 stuff out. Hey, cut when they were playing Washington State. Hey, he's got to cut that D2 stuff out. I told him. And they did enough, barely, to beat Washington State. Look ahead game, you can call it that, with Georgia coming up, so you might understand. But that was a little too close with the guys from Pullman in town.
Georgia also needs to stop getting off the slow starts against good teams.
Are they bringing the officials from Jordan-Hare to this game? Because that might help Georgia as well.
I don't know. It's not like the NBA where they tell you who the referee matchup will be.
Just because college football fans are much crazier.
Yeah, no,
than that.
They wouldn't make it to the stadium at the time.
If they remember if they remember something you did last year and then you're coming back, you're probably right about that. So those are you got Texas Tech versus ASU. Looks like Sam Levis is going to be back. Thankfully for Arizona State fans, the Jeff Sims experience at least is over temporarily. There is something, not that it's a big thing because of who the opponent is, but Memphis is 6-0. They're trying to get that group of five playoff spot, and they have a game the following week against USF. So it could be a look ahead spot there, but UAB is bad. They just fired Trent Dilfer, which might help. Who knows?
I was gonna say maybe it's the best UAB's looked all season.
We saw what happened with UCLA when they got rid of their guys. So who knows? But that's just a game to look to. Does Memphis avoid the look ahead spot? Because we might have the group of five game of the year the next week when it's South Florida versus Memphis for a chance to put themselves in the spot to get to the playoff. Of course, Navy's rolling around at undefeated as well. So that is something to pay attention to as well. The midshipmen might be involved in a potential playoff.
The United States battle. Army will have something to say about this.
Army has a spoiler to that level. Army wins and they keep Navy out of the playoff.
Rolling into Memphis to take that spot. I don't know if they play.
Navy does play Memphis. It's the last game of the
Navy.
Navy plays Memphis. Okay. Last game of the regular season.
I think you can get there by boat.
I don't know. I imagine they'll get there by plane. We will go to break with that, and we have probably a short segment before we get to Michael Carroll. Michael Carroll is the host of Comicast. He will tell you about a movie he saw in theaters. Either he'll recommend it or tell you to stay away. And, of course, he'll give you some things to stay home and watch as well. So we'll get to Michael Carroll in a couple minutes. If you want to join us, I'm sure maybe Eric is saving his call for Michael. But if you want to call us about something else beyond movies and television, it's 713-780-3776. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5. Wes.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
So we got the Texans on Monday night, which means we've got games on Sunday coming to our area, which isn't our favorite team. So, who do we got? We in this fair city are going to be able to watch the Las Vegas Raiders versus the Kansas City Chiefs. So, if you are looking for an AFC West battle to turn your attention to, that's what's coming to us on CBS. We'll get the number one crew, though, Jim Nance and Tony Romo.
That's the number one crew game?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the rest of the AFC. I guess you could have sent them to Colts Chargers, but Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt get that one.
It's a better game.
It is a better game, but I guess you put Nance and Romo with Pat Mahomes. So that's the one we are going to watch in this city. And for Fox, we will get Philadelphia versus the Vikings. No real contest otherwise. It was either going to be New Orleans and Chicago or Carolina and the Jets. It's a Fox doubleheader, so
okay,
we'll get Washington and Dallas as opposed to Green Bay and Arizona.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll get Romo and Brady because Brady's on the call for Washington and Dallas. You can compare and contrast the two styles from the two prominent former quarterbacks calling games in the NFL.
Are we getting the Colts LA game? Colts Chargers?
No. We're getting Chiefs Raiders.
No, but Chiefs Raiders is a noon kick.
Yeah, but also we only get one game. Oh. We're getting the early game. We're not getting the late game.
How in 2025 is it?
If you don't have, obviously, Sunday ticket. Or you
but, can, like, even, like, on a way to not spend $500 sure. on Sunday ticket, like, why does CBS have one window and then professional bull riding on Sunday?
I'm not sure why you can't.
Like, why can't it just be
each team, each network has two windows. I'm not sure why that is.
I don't even say you have to give me the best game of the window.
But why can't I have a chance to watch four games every weekend? Particularly when the local team's not playing. I know there's maybe something about conflict and the local team owns the market, so you can't put a game up against them. I think it's particularly when you're at home, you can't do that. Mm. I'm not sure exactly what the rule is when the local team's at home.
That makes sense.
But what the hell? When they're playing on Monday, why don't you just give us four games?
Why is James Brown going to have to kick it to, like, some celebrity golf tournament after this?
For this part of the country, but for other parts,
yeah,
they get to watch Chargers.
The 1 and 2 seeds in the AFC.
Yeah, Chargers and Colts aren't getting a lot of coverage. Like, most of the country is going to be watching Geno Smith go to Kansas City.
You know,
when you have two of the best teams in the league playing against each other late.
If the NFL wasn't the richest and most successful and most watched sport in America, you could really have some problems with how they show these games. But
and
I
what
guess,
they force you to pay to watch
$20 billion every year. So
yeah,
whatever
they're doing is working.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, guys, what are we doing?
It's
I'm
tough.
Not even saying I get to pick the games. I'm just saying
give me
a game.
It's you ridiculous.
Give me the worst, whatever the worst game CBS had. You give me Giants Broncos. That's better than professional bull riding. No offense to professional bull riders.
It's true.
Just on a Sunday.
It feels like they have professional bull riding for this very thing because they can't. They're not going to run double headers.
Spend any money on it?
Yeah. All it is inventory for them. Those are our complaints. But those are your games.
Okay, so it's a Fox day. It sounds like.
As far as compelling stuff, Philadelphia, Minnesota to start and. I mean, Dallas, Washington.
Chiefs Raiders is only interesting if the Chiefs are much worse than we thought.
Yeah, if the Raiders go in there and give them a game.
That's
great, I guess, for us. But otherwise, I will be watching the Fox stuff along with Red Zone. All right, we'll go to break with that. Michael Carroll will join us next. You can call in to the host of Comicast, 713-780-3776. He does that podcast with John Lee. He'll join us. He's got a movie review. He had a screening that he took part in, and he saw a movie, and we'll see what he thinks of it, and then he'll give you some other recommendations as well. We are with Michael Carroll when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
It's Friday, and so you're probably wondering, what am I going to watch this weekend? Besides all the sports, of course. If you're not sure if you should go to the theater or stay home and binge something, we got you covered on the Del Olalea Show. Time to talk about what you should be watching this weekend with Del Olalea, Sean Mapes, and some guy named Michael Carroll.
Michael Carroll is here. He is one of the hosts of Comicast, which you can hear on Wednesdays on ESPN 97.5. This week it's at 7. From 7 to 8, it is your lead-in to the Mike Elko Show.
So yeah.
If you want to hear about pop culture, comics, and then listen to the voice, maybe not the voice of the Aggies, but at least the face of the Aggies program. Maybe they're undefeated. Maybe they're not. We'll see.
What a pre-entry into the Texas A&M Coaches Show.
Do you think you should slip in like the final 2 minutes of your show, a little Aggie stuff, since you know who's coming up next? Hey!
Yeah.
You ready for some Aggie? Some great Aggie talk.
Some Aggie talk.
Mike Elko is coming up next right here on ESPN 97.5.
We got to talk about the Arkansas game coming up this weekend and, you know, recap. Yeah, I could probably slip that in.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
It's unnecessary. But
maybe you should do it just to see, like, how John reacts to you just throwing in the Aggie update at the end of every show.
just to see what he does as you go rogue.
He would do the thing where he'd just be like, he would be silent as soon as I finish. Okay. And then he would instantly leave the call. He wouldn't even stay for the rest
of
it.
So I guess we're done. All right.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sans you know, disrupting the entire flow of your own show for my benefit, tell people what's going on. What's going on with Comicast right now in your latest episode?
Issue, excuse me. Yes, get it right. No.
Issue
616, available now wherever you get your podcasts. It's all about Peacemaker Season 2, the Episode 8 finale. Of course, one of us really enjoyed the season finale. The other one felt like it should have been Episode 7 should have been the season finale.
Got it.
I'll let you listen to figure out which one of us decided that. But we reviewed that, as well as we talked a little bit about New York Comic Con. We have hopefully some more discussion about that next week to react to more of the news that came out from this past weekend. We talked a little bit about box office, because there's been some recent woes, if you will, with some recent releases. And John kind of related it to superhero fatigue, that it's not really about superhero fatigue, as you can tell by box office performance for a lot of films.
For other movies, yes. Marvel was catching it for lack of results when it came to Fantastic Four and other things. And it turns out maybe it's just the movie apparatus as a whole that people are a little tired of. I will probably see something this weekend. I am not thrilled about the fact that I can show up 20 minutes after the alleged start time of a movie and still be there on time. Look, I love a trailer, but I'm not the guy for it, because I just watch trailers on YouTube. Well, I'm not surprised. Other people don't do that. So for me, anything that's being run is just a repeat of something I saw probably a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it's the game of trailers has changed so completely, because it premieres on a Monday.
Yeah.
And by the time I'm actually in the theater, I've seen the trailer like 8 times, because it also plays as a YouTube ad before whatever video I go watch or whatever the case may be. So the aspects of trailers has completely changed. And on top of that, intermixed with all the trailers are the 18th time I've seen this Eminem commercial, or Nicole Kidman doing her, you know, whatever ad, or just the same ads over and over again in a theater. And so that experience has not been great.
Yeah, the process feels like when a show has a series or season finale and there's always another ending.
Yes.
There's always a wrap up of another storyline. When you think the show is over, then there's more. Sometimes that can be good. When it comes to movies, just can you not pump fake me when I think, oh, you've done like 5 trailers now, we're going to the movie, you got a commercial to run, and then you're going to run more? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the reason, but I know that's my main issue with going to the theater.
I do like that, and I don't know if this was like a Christopher Nolan stipulation or something like that, but like the Odyssey trailer, I've only seen it once, and it was because of, I forget what movie it was ahead of. It might have been Fantastic Four.
I think I saw it there too.
Yeah, I haven't seen it ever since, and it's still not out available online, which it's a year out, so it makes sense, but I am surprised that one hasn't hit YouTube yet. So to have stuff like that, I wish more studios would do things like that, where you can only see it in the theater for maybe the first month, and then it eventually releases online, something like that.
Eric, I see you, and your topic falls in line maybe with what Mike is going to talk about here, but we got this tweet from Dreamshake. He was talking about being behind on shows. So he hadn't watched season 2 of House of the Dragon. He just started rewatching season 1. Now, we're not going to review that, but it leads me into a discussion of, well, something we've been talking about already, trailers. Did you see Night of the Seven Kingdom trailer?
I haven't watched it yet. I started to watch it, and then something happened, and I got sidetracked. But I know the tone and the style of this one is going to be very different compared to what we've expected with Game of Thrones content to this point.
Yes, from what I can tell, what I've read, the series, each episode will be about 30 minutes long. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't know the background, this is a George R. R. Martin novella. Not surprisingly, he has not finished the series of these books, because he never finishes anything, it feels like. But
he'll take on a project.
Yes, but the tone, as you said, it'll be a little bit more, even if by watching the trailer, you see there's a bit more comedy involved, a little lighter than some other things, but there will be the dark moments that Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon have as well. Also, it's from the small folk perspective. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be in a, like, this is this whole show is set around attorney. The six episodes are going to be set around attorney. You're not going to walk into a tent with the Targaryens unless one of the main characters in there as well. So it's going to be about his perspective, because he was born in Flea Bottom. You're going to find, is that the town in King's Landing? I forgot what it's called. But
yeah, it's Flea Bottom.
Yeah, he was born in Flea Bottom, so it's going to be from his perspective as he tries to make his way as a hedge knight. All right, let's get to, the movie you saw.
I did.
This week, and then we can take a call from Eric. Michael, your thoughts on Black Phone 2?
Black Phone 2 is an interesting one. It's obviously a continuation of Finn and Gwen's story from the first film, which came out in 2022. I didn't realize it'd been three years now from that. I liked it. I enjoyed it overall. I thought it was not particularly scary, just kind of creepy and dark, a little bit bloodier than the first one. Again, it's set 4 years after the first one, and it is a full-on continuation of Finn's story and Gwen's story. The actor and actress return for this one. And, of course, Ethan Hawke's back to be the creepy grabber yet again. And terrifying as always, creepy as always, Ethan Hawke delivers another great performance here. But I think the standout for me is Madeline McGraw, who plays Gwen. You know, Mason Thames plays Finn, and he was the main part of it in the first film. He's a main part here, too, but I would say this is more of a Madeline McGraw-focused feature this time around. Her storyline was the plot B of that last one. Hers is plot A for this one, and I think it works because she's a strong, strong actress. The way she's able to display raw emotion throughout the course of it. Now, I think the thing that's the biggest difference from the first one to this one is that the supernatural aspect was a part of it, but it wasn't the focus, right? This one, it amps up the supernatural a lot more, and it's more of the focus to the point where it reminds you of maybe a little bit of Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibes. Okay. With this one. And that, for some people, may not work because they like the more grounded, tangible, grounded, you know, to a certain extent grounded aspects of the first one. This one, I don't want to say completely abandons it, but it's less about that and more just about the supernatural aspects of both characters, of both Finn and Gwen. And I think it worked. I that's why I liked it a little bit more than the first one. Still the same like level of pacing, does interesting things with the film effects to tell like when different things are happening in different timelines, maybe not different timelines, but different aspects of the story. Scott Derrickson, who's the director for this one and co-wrote it, I think does a great job here. It's not perfect. Specifically, like the setting where they're set in Alpine Lake, North Denver or whatever, and it's supposed to be like a blizzard, supposed to be cold. That is just an aesthetic choice.
No one is feeling the cold.
No, like literally, like I felt like everyone should have died from hypothermia by the end of this movie. Like there is no chance.
They're all wearing light jackets.
Yeah, there's. If you're going through a blizzard, I mean, I'm not a snow expert, but I feel like you're going to wear more than one like windbreaker or something. Yeah. You know, I'm just little things like that. But I mean, that's a minor thing. If you just don't worry about the coldness of everything. Some of the dialogue's a little weird, but overall, I enjoyed it. I gave it a 3.5 on Letterboxd and thought it was good. It was an enjoyable time at the theater. Not one of the top-tier horror movies of the year, but it's definitely a good one for folks to watch, especially if you're fans of the first one. Again, you may not like the supernatural aspect, but if you're down for it, I think you'll enjoy Black Phone 2.
So Madeline McGraw is the older sister of the main, I guess you want to say, child actor.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry, my bad. You're right.
I was going to tell people.
You're talking about real life.
Yeah, she has a younger sister who's an actress as well. She is the main child in the Megan series.
Yeah.
So both of them are doing their thing, and Madeline, like you said, she was a player in the first one, as I saw from the trailer. It's not no surprise that she is the lead. Her storyline is the lead one, but yeah, her younger sister is in the Megan. I assume it's a series. I'm sure they'll get a third one out at some point. It feels like it.
Probably.
Let's get to Eric here, who wants to talk about Black Phone 2. Then we'll go to break and we'll get more from Michael. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I heard the Black Bone 2, I guess, like, the setting supposed to be like The Shining, with the blizzard and all that. Also, is his brother, I guess, he killed him in the first one with the
Hey. For people who haven't seen Black Phone, what are you doing?
Well, it came out like 10 years ago.
He just told you it was 3, not 10, but go ahead.
But I heard his brother's going to be in it too somehow. And also, I heard Clayface coming out next year is going to be really scary. Scared in the Black Phone 2 and the Black Phone. And also, is there any two? Mr. Freeze going to be the villain in the Batman, the new Batman 2? I hang up the list.
So we're going to ignore his reaching for spoilers in Black Phone 2. Clayface is going to be a horror, body horror film. And Mike Flanagan, who does a lot of the stuff on Netflix, is it called the Flaniverse or the Flanaganverse, whatever they call it. You know, he's got House on Haunted Hill. He's got plenty of those series.
House
on
Usher.
Yeah, he's going to do horror. It fits for Clayface. I don't know that Mr. Freeze is going to be the villain in...
We talked
about how that doesn't seem to fit the world.
Yeah, I mean, unless you change Mr. Freeze a lot, I don't know that he'll be the villain for that. It's still kind of up in the air, I think.
Nice to meet you. That's probably not happening.
Yeah, it's probably not happening.
Probably not in Matt Reeves' world, no.
No, not Matt Reeves' world. But Clayface is definitely going to be a scary film. It's with Mike Flanagan involved, it's going to go for a strong, strong horror vibe, I would imagine, and be creepy and all those aspects. So I wouldn't be shocked if it's a little bit scarier than Black Phone 2. Obviously, we have to wait to see if that'll be the case. But, I would not be shocked if Clayface is a lot scarier because of Mike Flanagan and what they're seemingly planning.
And I said House on Haunted Hill is the haunting of Hill House, the haunting of Bly Manor.
We were close.
Yeah, Midnight Mass, he's got a lot of the stuff. You can watch it all on Netflix. He's got a Carrie movie series he's going to do as well.
He's got a lot, man.
He's doing a lot of stuff. We'll go to break with that. We'll come back with more from Michael. He'll give you more recommendations or maybe some notes as far as things that are going to be out and you can watch. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you about Monument Chevrolet. It's always a yes when you go there. No matter what car you want, no matter what truck you want, go to Monument Chevrolet and find the car or truck for you. And it's about options. They've got Truck Month extended through October. So if you're looking for a Silverado 1500, they got them for you. And you find the price and the model you want. And then head on out there to Pasadena. First, the website, monumentchevrolet.com is how you view their lineup of cars. And then you head on out there. They're in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. Find the vehicle you want. Then meet a salesperson who will walk you through the car buying process. And they understand. Sometimes it can be a little bit tricky, particularly if you're a first-time buyer. But they've been in business for over 50 years. So that means they've been helping people getting great cars for a very long time. And you should be next. So find the car you want. Maybe it's an EV, like a Blazer. They have those. And then get to Pasadena. So, great cars, great people, great service is all there for you at Monument Chevrolet. That's monumentchevrolet.com. And they're in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And as always, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
So Michael gave his review of Black Phone 2. What else is out there, Michael? What do we got?
If you want to know from me, After the Hunt, which is the new film starring Julia Roberts, Andrew Garfield, and Ayo Edebiri, hard pass on that one. 38% with critics, 43% with audiences. A couple of the people that I know from some of these screenings described it as very pretentious and very slow moving, slow going. There's a sequence that's just her getting water, Julia Roberts' character getting water, that goes on for like 5 minutes. And it's just like, what are we doing? Like, has there ever been editing or anything like that?
Like buying water? Or
no, just like getting water to take medicine.
Oh.
Like, what are we doing?
In her kitchen? Like,
yeah, just
going
like
going into a cabinet, getting a glass?
I forget if it's in the at her work or at her home, but like apparently Luca, I forget how you say his last name, but the director behind Challengers decided, yeah, let's keep this whole sequence in this movie. Very weird, but it's just a boring mess of a movie. Don't pass on that one. Good Fortune, the new comedy with Aziz Ansari, Seth Rogen, and Keanu Reeves. That's probably the other big release this weekend. It's getting solid reviews, 79% with critics so far. If you're looking for more family fare, there's Grow, a family film, and Pets on a Train, an animated family film. So if you're looking for something to take the kids to, you may check those out. In terms of streaming, there's actually quite a bit. The Diplomat Season 3. Are you a Diplomat watcher?
I am.
How is it? Because I've seen, but I haven't actually tried to watch it.
I'll watch anything with Kerry Russell to just give it a shot, just because I've enjoyed what she's been in the past. It's good. The first two seasons were entertaining and fun. I mean, you have to maybe suspend disbelief a little bit for some of the things that are happening, because I don't know if a regular old political drama is enough, considering how they ended season two.
Right.
So the basis of it is, Kerry Russell's kind of a hard boiled. She's, I don't know if you would call her, she was in the CIA or whatever she was in beforehand, but they want to clean her up a little bit and turn her into a diplomat. And her husband was a former diplomat, but he's a little troublesome and they don't want to elevate him. They wanted to rather have it be her. And it's the push and pull of, he did the job, now she's doing the job. And then you have all the conflicts that go on between countries involved. And then we have this inciting incident at the end of season two that jumps off season three. So I enjoyed it. It's fun. I mean, it's an easy watch. And it's just a Netflix show, pretty much. But it's a well done one.
And reviews seem to speak to that. 94% with critics right now. And season three premiered. So if you want to check out season three of The Diplomat on Netflix, you can check that out. A couple of Inspired by True Event shows are out right now. Limited series on Peacock. Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy, of course, the John Wayne Gacy serial killer story. But this one's done in a way to where, you know, I think I talked about it the last time I was on here, the what was it, Monster Ed Gein, where Ryan Murphy kind of like glamorizes these serial killers to a certain aspect, and it can be a little like, what are we doing? But this one, it feels more like how it should be if you're depicting some of these horrible, horrible people. So it's getting solid reviews. It's available on Peacock right now. All 8 episodes are available right now. And the Murdoch's Death in the Family, a limited series on Hulu, 71% right now with critics. The first 3 episodes are available now. It's, again, inspired by real life events.
I've seen the doc on this one. It's a family who, they're very powerful, controlled a portion of South Carolina, and you know, from the outwardly they look like big money, rich, perfect stuff. And then of course you find out as you dive deeper into who they are that they got real problems, and it led to murder, as you can tell by Death in the Family. It was, at least the docs that I've seen are interesting. We'll see if this show lives up to it.
Patricia Arquette's one of the stars, and Jason Clarke is in he looks completely different in what they've done with him.
He's currently in a show on Apple TV as well, who they've rebranded. I've always called them Apple TV, but they're officially like Apple TV Plus. Now they've rebranded to Apple TV. It's just the HBO Max thing all over again, pretty much.
Yeah.
But he's in one where he's a local marshal in Alaska
Last Frontier.
Yeah, in a plane with a lot of awful criminals are on, and then there's one super criminal who might be associated with the CIA, and that's the CIA's real goal, to get him back. But you also have all these other criminals and how they're going to affect the town. Yeah. Of course, the town with people carry a lot of guns, and it's cold outside, so a lot of stuff. That one is fun. I mean, I don't know how good it'll be, but the first couple episodes are fun. And yeah, he looks like Jason Clarke in that show. Mm-hmm. I've seen what he looks like in this show.
He doesn't. Yeah, no. And one last one, because I know we got to run out here in a second, but Splinter Cell Death Watch. Now, I am a video game head, and one of the first games that I played on my Xbox was Splinter Cell. And so this is somewhat of a continuation, somewhat of a reboot, but it focuses on Sam Fisher, the character from the books and games. It's an animated show. All 8 episodes are available now, but of course, shadowy world of espionage, and he's been retired for a little bit, but he's pulled back into things in this animated show that's very good so far.
on Netflix if you want to watch that. All right, that wraps it up for us. Not just the show, but for the week. Michael Carroll is the host of Comicast. He does that with John Lee. You can hear that wherever you listen to podcasts and also hear it here on ESPN 97.5 on Wednesdays from 7 to 8. Sean, since we're done for the day and the week, what does that mean?
Flip me over, Mike.
I will, John.
John's,
will.
You might have to do that next week, isn't he? I think he's going back
to
California.
Yeah, he's back. He's going back. Yeah.
So, yeah, Mike may be flipping John over several times next week.
However much he needs me.
He's a giver, everybody. Michael Carroll.
I help.
We'll talk to him next week at 11:30. We're done. Talk to you on Monday.